want to invite you to take your Bibles and turn with me to the book of Genesis, chapter 37. Genesis, chapter 37. That's going to be the text that we're going to be studying tonight. It's good to see everyone here, and we're going to be examining this text and considering some problems that Joseph had and how he faced those problems, how he dealt with those problems, and how he overcame those problems. You know, Joseph is a unique individual in biblical history. Of all the people in the Bible, I mean, you look back, Adam and Eve did something wrong. You look back to Abraham, he lied. Noah, he got drunk. On and on and on you could go. Now, I'm not saying that Joseph never sinned, but you know, we do not read a negative comment about Joseph. Not one. He is a unique individual. He is a great example for us. And there are some areas in his life where I think he is a type of Christ. And I think that we can see that in our lesson tonight. He is a type of Christ. He is a prefigure. He suffered, was rejected by his own brethren. He became a slave in the sense that, and of course Jesus became a slave in that he left the glories of heaven and came to the earth and dwelt among men and served as a bondservant, according to Philippians chapter 2. And so many things. And then, of course, the exaltation and the reigning. So there are many things that we could say. There's a shadow there. There's a picture there. And so there are so many examples that we can find in this man's life. He was a great man. There's no question about that. And we're going to see, beginning tonight, some areas in which he faced problems and he overcame those problems, or at least demonstrates to us how we can overcome them as well. Tonight we're going to look at these two things, and I understand, you know, many of us had a long week, and we're just going to focus on two points tonight, and we're going to get done with this, and then we're going to quit, and we'll come back later and talk about the rest of these things. But we're going to talk about these things. I'm dividing it up like this as well, because some things that took place in his homeland. Then we're going to look at some problems as he gets on into Egypt. Facing persistent temptation, facing false accusations, facing ingratitude as he's in prison. And then he's rise to power and fame in Egypt. And facing painful memories when his brothers come to him. And facing past forgiven sins. And how did he deal with the sin of his brothers that we're going to study tonight? All these things are parts of Joseph's life that we can use as examples in our own time, in our own day. Let's begin, and let me just put this up on the screen, and we're going to read down through verse 11. So hopefully again that you have your Bibles open to Genesis chapter 37. Here are some things that Joseph faced in his life according to Genesis chapter 37. Let's just begin reading. Let me back up again. In verse 1. Genesis 37 verse 1. Now Jacob dwelt in a land where his father was a stranger in the land of Canaan. This is the history of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brothers, and the lad was with the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought a bad report of them to his father. Now, Israel loved Joseph more than all his children, because he was the son of his old age. Also, he made him a tunic of many colors. But when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peaceably to him. Now Joseph had a dream, and he told it to his brothers, and they hated him even more. So he went to them, "Please hear this dream which I have dreamed. There we were binding sheaves in the field. Then behold, my sheaf arose and also stood upright. And indeed your sheaves stood all around and bowed down to my sheaf." And his brothers said to him, "Shall you indeed reign over us, or shall you indeed have dominion over us?" So they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words. Then he dreamed still another dream, and told it to his brothers, and said, "Look, I have dreamed another dream. And this time the sun, the moon, and the 11 stars bowed down to me." So he told it to his father and his brothers, and his father rebuked him and said to him, "What is this dream that you have dreamed? Shall your mother and I and your brothers indeed come to bow down to the earth before you?" And his brothers envied him But his father kept the matter in his mind. There are several things that Joseph faced in this particular passage. First of all, he squealed on his brothers. He let his father know some things that his brothers were doing that were not right. And in doing that, of course, isn't this the way it goes? I mean, the guy who tells the truth about somebody who's doing something wrong, that's always the bad guy. It's always wrong to tell other folks, isn't it, that there are bad things going on in somebody else's life? Well, there's no place for gossip. That's wrong. But that's not what Joseph was doing here. He was telling the proper authority, his father, what his brothers had done. His brothers were doing something that they were not supposed to be doing. And you know what? Joseph couldn't correct them. It was up to the father to correct them. That was his job. And they needed correcting. And you know, there's nothing wrong. I can understand a sense of privacy in some matters. If I were counseling some young teenager, for example, and I come to learn something about that teenager, something that they were doing that was endangering their life, and they were not straightening it out, what should I do? Should I keep that to myself, or should I go to his daddy and tell him about it? What should I do about that? If I'm the person I ought to be, I'll go and take care of that matter, because those people, that young fellow is doing something wrong. It's going to endanger him and perhaps somebody else. And it needs to be stopped. So there is a time when it is right to tell on somebody else. Now, young people especially, listen, that does not mean that you're to be a tattletale. That's not what Joseph did here. He's not a tattletale. But he simply relayed a story. He relayed the facts of the case, actually. It would be a better way to put that. Then we see that his father favored him. Now that first thing there made his brothers dislike him. And then his father favored him. Now, that does not mean that it's okay for fathers to favor one son over another. In fact, this would be a mistake that you could ascribe, I believe, to Israel, to Jacob. I believe that he did something here that was not wise, because we should be impartial to our children. And it caused problems in the family. But his father favored him, and thus the other brothers hated him. Joseph because of it. And then in verse 4 we see that his brothers hated him. This is the consequence of it. They hated him and could not speak peaceably to him. They couldn't even say, "Hello, good morning, Joseph, how you doing today?" No, every time you can just hear it, can't you? Some snide remark. "Get away from us, you coat of many colors, fella." You know, it just always something to ridicule. I can hear them. Tattletale. They couldn't speak peaceably with him. So they hated him. And their hatred grew. Look at verse 5. So Joseph had a dream and he told it to his brothers, and they hated him even more. Now this wasn't just a dream that Joseph had by chance, I don't believe. This is something that came to pass. This was a truth that eventually came to pass. Joseph was a ruler over them. He became that person. But because of his dream, they hated him. They hated the thought of their brother ruling over them. And they envied him. There in verse 11, he dreams another dream, and his brothers envied him. They wanted something bad to happen to him. So here you have Joseph's problem. He had a problem with his family. He faced hatred. He faced envy. Well, how did he handle that problem? What was his reaction? Let's look at verses 13 and 14. In fact, let's just begin reading in verse 12. And let's go all the way down through verse 17. Verse 12. Then his brothers went to feed their father's flock in Shechem. And Israel said to Joseph, "Are not your brothers feeding the flock in Shechem? Come, I will send you to them." So he said to him, "Here I am." Then he said to him, "Please go and see if it is well with your brothers and well with the flocks, and bring back word to me." You know, that indicates that he was faithful. That's probably what happened the first time when Joseph brought the bad report. That's probably exactly what happened. His father probably sent him to find out what his brothers were doing, and he came back with a faithful report. But this is what he does here. And he said, please go and see if it is well with your brothers and well with the flocks, and bring back word to me. So he went, or so he sent him out of the valley of Hebron, and he went to Shechem. Now a certain man found him, and there he was wandering in the field. And the man asked him, saying, what are you seeking? He's looking for somebody. So he said, I am seeking my brothers. Please tell me. He's polite too, by the way. That's important. Please tell me where they are feeding their flocks. And the man said, they have departed from here, for I heard them say, let us go to Dothan. So Joseph went after his brothers and found them at Dothan. Well, what can we learn from that? How does that fit into the point that I'm trying to make? Well, first of all, he was ready and willing to obey his father. I mean, if you knew that your family hated you, like Joseph's family hated him, how willing would you be to go check up on them again? Then the first time. How eager would you be to do that? But he obeyed his father's instructions to go find his brother. He says, here I am. Reminds me of Samuel. Lord, here am I. And so we find a willingness here, don't we? Israel said to Joseph, are not your brothers feeding the flock at Shechem? Come, I will send you to them. So he said, here I am. Whatever you want me to do, Father, I'll do it. He was obedient to his father. Knowing his brothers would not be happy to see him, he was yet persistent in his search. You know, I tell you what, if it were me, and I had 11 brothers that hated me, that envied me, you know, I don't know that I would have been too persistent. I went down to Shechem, the first place that they were supposed to be, and when I found a fellow there that said, they're not here, I might have said, well, that's all right. See you later. And went on back home and told Dad I couldn't find them. That's not what Joseph did, was it? He kept on persisting, seeking. And that word seeking, by the way, is an important term. He was seeking his brothers because that's what his father told him to do. He was looking diligently for them. He was persistent in his search. And he finally found them. There is absolutely no evidence whatsoever of Joseph returning hatred for hatred or envy for envy. In fact, we read in Genesis chapter 42, and we'll look at this passage in just a moment, where he pleaded with his brothers to do no harm, do no wrong. It's like Joseph was wanting his brothers to do what was right in this. He's wanting to help them. And that's rather interesting. No, there is no evidence anywhere of Joseph returning hatred for hatred. He wasn't going to find them so that he could sneak up and get around the rock there and peek on them and find them doing something else wrong so he could run back and tell his daddy. That wasn't what Joseph was trying to do. There is no evidence whatsoever of Joseph returning hatred for hatred. But how can we apply all of this? And how does this fit our life? I mean, Joseph faced hatred. He faced envy, and so do we, don't we? Well, so can we. Many of us can identify with this problem. Many of us may even have family members who hate us, who envy us. We can identify with this. Many of us have people in the workplace who hate us. We have former friends that hate us because the truth, we took the truth, we stood upon truth, and they hate us for it. Many of us can identify at this point. Now, we are instructed to never return evil for evil or reviling for reviling. If someone hates us, if someone envies us, that doesn't give me the right to hate them back. I shouldn't hate anybody. I should love everybody. I should always want what is best for every person. Period. I don't care who they are. I don't care what they've done to me. And I don't care what they've done to somebody else. Let me tell you something. There is no room in the heart of a Christian to hate somebody. Now, you can hate what they do. You can hate their sin. You can hate them living a sinful life. But you know what? Every action that we take towards that person should be an action that is for their good. Even if it is a means of punishment. Even if it is separation, even if it is an alienation, it is for their good. That's the goal. That's always the purpose behind what we do. We should never, ever return evil for evil or reviling for reviling. Romans 12, 17, 1 Thessalonians 5, 15, and 1 Peter 3 and verse 9. In fact, this is what these passages say. There's a negative and then there's a positive in all of these passages. We are to instead of
returning evil for evil or reviling for reviling, we are to have regard for good things in the sight of all men. If it is possible, as much as depends upon you, live peaceably with all men. We're to live peaceably. We're to do everything within our power. I believe Joseph did that. Joseph was obeying his father, doing what he was supposed to do. Did Joseph do anything wrong in any of this? No, he didn't. And you know, even as we read him telling his brothers of his dreams, I don't see in there anywhere where he's boasting and bragging and said, you know, and you better understand something, brothers. This is going to come down. I'm going to rule over you one day, and you're not going to like it very much when I do. That wasn't Joseph's attitude. He was just relaying the dreams that was given to him. We need to have regard for the good. We need to, as much as possible, live peaceably with all men. Now, there are some folks you just can't live peaceably with. You just can't do it. We went out to lunch this afternoon. There was a waitress that was, it was a buffet style thing, and there was a waitress in the middle. And there was this old fellow standing in front of me, filling his plate full. And he asked the waiter to do something. Well, the waiter didn't hear him. I was watching. And boy, he got mad. And his wife said, you should have talked like that. He was hot. He said, well, he ought to listen to me. He ought to pay attention. He's here to serve us. And I can just picture right now, that fellow's hard to get along with. Well, we shouldn't be like that. We ought to be people who are easy to get along with. In 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 15, we're to warn those who are unruly. Now, you know what? Living peacefully doesn't mean, you know, I know you're doing something wrong, but I'm not going to say anything about it because I value peace more than I value truth and righteousness and holiness. I can't do that, can I? Peace must be based upon truth, righteousness, and holiness. Not just peace for the sake of having peace. And that's what a lot of folks are doing in the religious world today. They're just throwing out truth, righteousness, and holiness. And they're saying, oh, just come on in, whatever you're doing, whatever lifestyle you enjoy, that's fine. You're a homosexual, that's all right, come on in. That's what people are doing today. We can't do that. Peace must be based upon truth, righteousness, and holiness. Not just peace for the sake of peace. We must warn those who are unruly, Paul said. Be patient with all. Yeah, we ought to be patient. Long-suffering. That doesn't mean that we can have fellowship in constant fellowship, you know, and just treat somebody like everything's fine when it's not. We can't do that. But we must be patient with all. We talked a little bit about patience this morning. I was thinking just a few moments ago, you know, patience is not an easy thing. But we do. We need to be patient with one another and help and encourage one another. Verse 15, always pursue what is good both for yourselves and for all. Always pursue what is good, both for yourselves and for all. That's love. That's what that is. That's love in action. So instead of responding to hatred, those who are sinning, and that is taking place there in the context, those who are persecuting you, that's in the context of 1 Thessalonians 5 as well, instead of responding evil with evil, I need to respond with, well, tell them that they're wrong. But then I'm to be patient with them. And then I'm to pursue what's good for those folks. Now that's what I should do. In 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 8, Peter says, finally, all of you be of one mind, having compassion for one another, love as brothers, be tenderhearted, be courteous, not returning evil for evil or reviling for reviling, but on the contrary, blessing, knowing that you were called to this, that you may inherit a blessing. Notice what Peter is saying here. Exactly what we've been talking about. I should have compassion. When someone is led astray in sin or in error and false doctrine, you know, I ought to have compassion for that person and try to help that person. Now, if they say, I don't want the help, well, you know, that's their business, that's their choice. But I should never say, you know, I'll never help you again as long as you live. I'll never, you come back wanting help later on and you forget it. That's not me. And I hope that's not you. We should be compassionate with one another, wanting what is best for one another, tender-hearted. You know, we ought to be touched by the difficulties of other people. not returning evil for evil, reviling for reviling, but on the contrary, blessing. You have one, not this, but this. Bless that person. Do what you can to make that person happy. Do what you can to make that person enjoy life. Knowing that you are called to this. This, as a Christian, this is your duty. You're to be the light of the world. You're to be the salt of the earth. You're to try to help people to become better people. That's what it's all about. That you may inherit a blessing. Now, if you help others become better, more Christ-like, then certainly you will be blessed for that. And then in verse 10 he goes on and he says, "For he who would love life and see good days, let him refrain his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking deceit. Let him turn away from evil and do good. Let him seek peace and pursue it. For the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous and his ears are open to their prayers. But the face of the Lord is against those who do evil." Now those who are doing evil are persecuting those who are doing righteousness. Now, those who are doing righteousness, he says, if you would love life and see good days, let him refrain his tongue from evil. That is, don't respond to those who are persecuting you in a negative way. You keep your mouth quiet. You return good instead of evil. Don't speak deceit. Don't guile, we were talking about this morning in our Bible class. Don't lay a trap for him. Don't try to hurt him and destroy him. You try to help him. Let him turn away from evil and do good. Just keep on doing good. Just do good. When someone does you wrong, well, do good. When someone does something that is devastating to you, how should you respond to that? By doing something devastating back? Getting my revenge? No. I'm going to do good to that person. Because I want that person to do what's right. And again, you know, for the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and his ears are open to their prayers. Now, here's the key to all of this. Listen. When I'm suffering, when I'm being persecuted, when people are doing me wrong, you know, the Lord's going to sort all this out. And I'm going to trust the Lord. He hears me. And it's going to be worth it all. Because one of these days, it's not one of these days that person's going to get what's coming to them. No, that's not the idea. One of these days, I'm going to get what's coming to me. Isn't that what we're all after? We just need to just keep on keeping on. Just keep on keeping on. But then something else happens to Joseph. Notice, if you will, in verse 18 of Genesis chapter 37. In fact, let's just read on down through verse 28. Genesis 37, 18 through 28. "Now when they saw him afar off, even before he came near them, they conspired against him to kill him. Then they said to one another, 'Look, this dreamer is coming.'" Now there's that sarcasm I was talking about earlier. Earlier it was the coat of many colors, now it's the dreamer. "Come therefore, let us now kill him and cast him into some pit, and we shall say some wild beast has devoured him. We shall see what will become of his dreams." But Reuben, he was the oldest, Reuben heard it, and he delivered him out of their hands and said, "Let us not kill him." And Reuben said to them, "Shed no blood, but cast him into this pit, which is in the wilderness, and do not lay a hand on him, that he might deliver him out of their hands and bring him back to his father." So it came to pass, when Joseph had come to his brothers, that they stripped Joseph of his tunic, the tunic of many colors that was on him. Then they took him and cast him into a pit, and the pit was empty. There was no water in it. And they sat down to eat a meal. Then they lifted their eyes and looked, and there was a company of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead with their camels, bearing spices, balm, and myrrh, on their way to carry them down to Egypt. So Judah said to his brothers, "What profit is there if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Come, and let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother." Oh, there's compassion, isn't it? "For he is our brother and our flesh." And his brothers listened. Then Midianite traders passed by, so the brothers pulled Joseph up and lifted him out of the pit and sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver, and they took Joseph to Egypt. They conspired against him. What wonderful brothers. I sarcastic, I hope you know, when I said they were compassionate. They were about as compassionate as some of our brethren sometimes. But they were not compassionate. They were, at least they didn't kill him, but I believe, again, God's providence is working all through this story. You know that, don't you? God's providence is just constantly moving through this. He is working to bring Jacob and his sons into Egypt to preserve them alive so that he can fulfill the promise that he made all the way back to Abraham. That's what God's doing. He's not doing this through miraculous working. He's doing it through providence. But his brothers conspired against him, and they cast him into this pit. And then they sold him into slavery. Boy, what kind of brothers. But what was Joseph's response? Let's turn over to Genesis chapter 42. Look at verse 21. Here you have the brothers speaking among themselves. And in verse 21, this is what we read. Then they said to one another, "We are truly guilty concerning our brother, for we saw the anguish of his soul when he pleaded with us, and we would not hear. Therefore, this distress has come upon us." Verse 22 goes on, "And Reuben answered them, saying, Did I not speak to you, saying, Do not sin against the boy? And you would not listen. Therefore, behold, his blood is now required of us." Joseph pleaded with his brothers, "Do not do this wrong." But they did it anyway. And even after, now this is a very important point in chapter 39. Go back to chapter 39, and I want you to notice something else. Verses 1 through 6. Here you have this young boy traded, sold into Egyptian bondage. Listen to the character of this young man. "Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. The Lord was with Joseph." Now that ought to tell you what kind of character the boy had. "The Lord was with Joseph, and he was a successful man, and he was in the house of his master the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all he did to prosper in his hand. So Joseph found favor in his sight and served him. Then he made him overseer of his house, and all that he had he put under his authority. So it was from the time that he had made him overseer of his house and all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in the house and in the field. Thus, he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he did not know what he had except for the bread which he ate. Now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance." Well, all of that says something about Joseph. It says something about his character. Now, we can say, well, God's kind of like Jacob here. You know, God just favored Joseph, and he put him over in Egypt, and he just blessed him. Well, there's a reason why God was blessing him. It wasn't because God just merely favored Joseph over the rest of them. No, Joseph was a righteous young man. That's why God blessed him. He was a man that was trustworthy. That's why Potiphar trusted him. That's why Potiphar placed him over all that he had. He was trustworthy. Now, you know, I could see it very easily been totally different than that. I mean, we hear these pop psychologists today talking about, well, you know, these young people, they have this traumatic experience in their life, and that's why they're having all these psychological problems today. Well, that may be true. There may be some dramatic event that took place in their life, and they may be suffering from that psychologically. I'm not questioning that. But look, there's a choice that you know, if you're in that situation, that you can make. Joseph made a choice here. He's going to continue to do what's right. He's going to serve the Lord. He's going to be faithful. He's going to be content with whatsoever things he finds himself in. That's like Paul, isn't it? It's exactly what Paul did. Joseph was trustworthy, loyal, and godly. Over in Acts, the seventh chapter, as Stephen is delivering his sermon on history, on this history of the Israelites, in verse 9, this is what Stephen says, "And the patriarchs, becoming envious, sold Joseph into Egypt, but God was with him and delivered him out of all his troubles." Why? Because Joseph trusted the Lord, that's why. Even in the midst of the trials, in the midst of the troubles, in the midst of the persecutions, guess what? Joseph never lost his trust or his faith in God. Joseph's response, he was trustworthy.
He could have easily been eaten up with bitterness and hatred and ungodliness. My brothers don't love me. My father doesn't know I'm alive. What's the use in living? What's the use in serving the Lord? Look what he did. He put me over here in Egypt. What kind of God would do that? He could have taken that attitude, but he didn't. He faced betrayal with faith in God. Now, let's make some applications at this point. Can we relate to this? Have you ever been betrayed? Has someone ever done you wrong? I think most all of us can say yes to that question. You know, betrayal does not justify hatred and bitterness. If it did, I'll tell you what, Joseph had every right to be a person filled with hatred and bitterness. But that's not Joseph. That's not the Joseph we read about. In Matthew chapter 5, if you turn with me over there, Matthew chapter 5, look at verse 43. Matthew 5 and verse 43. You have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. Now that's what you've heard said. But I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you, that you may be the sons of your Father in heaven. You do like your Father. For he makes his sun rise on the evil and on the good, and he sends rain on the just and on the unjust. For if you love those who love you, what reward do you have? That's what everybody does. Everybody, that's easy to do. It's not easy to love those who hate you and despitefully use you. It's easy to love those who love you, but it's not easy to love those who have done you wrong. We all know that's true. He goes on and he says, and if you greet your brethren only, what do you do more than others? Do not even the tax collectors do so? Certainly, that's easy to do. Be nice to those who are nice to you. But how about being nice to those who aren't nice to you? How about that? Therefore, you shall be perfect, just as your Father in heaven is perfect. We are to be living in such a way that we glorify our Father in heaven. You know, godliness is not determined by circumstances. It's not. Godliness, living a righteous, holy life, being honorable, glorifying God, trusting God, is not determined by our external circumstances. I don't care whether you're Joseph or you're living in 2007. Godliness is not determined by our external circumstances. In other words, we can be godly, content, and blessed, whatever our circumstances may be. I've visited people who have cancer and they know that they're about to pass away. And they're godly, they're content, and let me tell you something, they even take the view that they're blessed. That's amazing to me. But that's the truth. We can find blessing. We can find contentment in every circumstance. You know, that's what Paul said over in Philippians 4 and verse 11. Now that I speak in regard to need, or not that I speak in regard to need, for I have learned in whatever state I am to be content. Hebrews 13 and verse 5. The Hebrew writer there makes the same point. We're to be content in whatsoever things we have. And understand something. God's not going to leave us. God's not going to forsake us. Verse 5 says, let your conduct be without covetousness. Be content with what such things as you have, for He Himself has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. So we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper. I will not fear. What can man do to me? Well, they can hurt you. They can punish you. They can persecute you. They can take your physical life, as Jesus said. But they cannot take my godliness, they cannot take my contentment, and they cannot take my blessed life away from me. Not my blessing. And not my spiritual life. They can't do that. Nobody can do that. Psalms 37. Psalms the 37th chapter, a beautiful psalm. As David is depicting, you know, some suffering and trials and tribulations in his life. Verse 1, do not fret because of evildoers, nor be envious of their workers of iniquity, for they shall soon be cut down like the grass and wither as the green herb. Trust in the Lord, and there's the lesson. Trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land and feed on His faithfulness. Delight yourself also in the Lord, and He shall give you the desires of your heart. Commit your way to the Lord. Trust always in Him, and He shall bring it to pass. He shall bring forth your righteousness like the light, and your justice as the noonday. Rest in the Lord, and walk or wait patiently for Him, and do not fret because of him who prospers in his way, because of the man who brings wicked schemes to pass. Cease from anger and forsake wrath. Do not fret. It only causes harm. What wise words. What wonderful words. Yes, we will be persecuted. Yes, we will suffer. But trust. Trust in the Lord. Dwell in the land. Dwell in His blessings. Delight ourselves in the Lord. Commit ourselves to His way. Trust in Him again. Rest in the Lord. Cease from anger. Don't fret. Don't be anxious. And throughout Psalms 37, you find this same thing reiterated time and time again. Verse 23 especially, the steps of the good man are ordered by the Lord, and he delights in his way. Though he fall, verse 24, he shall not be utterly cast down. Though he, and by the way, I think in the context we can determine that he was knocked down by somebody else. Though someone calls him to stumble, though someone is there to knock him down, guess what? He will not be destroyed. He will not utterly be cast down, for the Lord upholds him with his hand. The Lord's always there for us to strengthen us. So how do you respond to hatred, envy, and betrayal? How do you respond? How do I respond? How do I respond to hatred? Do I respond to hatred with love? Is that how I respond to hatred? Wanting and doing good for them? How do I respond to envy? Do I respond to envy with kindness? Someone is envious of me, so I'm just kind back. How do I respond to betrayal? Revenge? Or do I trust the Lord? Knowing that the Lord will never betray me. The Lord's not going to forsake me. People will. There's no question about that. People will. You cannot be secure in any setting of life. I don't care what it is. If it involves you being in relationship with other people, people will betray you. Just the way it is. But I know somebody that never will. That's the Lord. Yeah, and I've told young people this, and I think it's very important for them to understand. When you're seeking a spouse, when you're seeking a wife or a husband, you find someone that loves the Lord more than they love you. And understand something. If you love the Lord more than you love them, then in a day, if per chance they were to happen to betray you, you hold on to the Lord. It's the Lord who saves, and He will always be there for you. We must trust in God. Joseph facing life problems. What a wonderful example of a young man. He wasn't old and wise. He was young. He started out 17 years old facing these troubles. How did he face hatred and envy and betrayal? He kept on keeping on. That's how he faced it. Future lessons, we're going to talk about the rest of these things. Many examples in the life of Joseph that I think can help us as we travel the road of life together. Maybe you are here tonight and you've never obeyed the gospel of Jesus Christ. We talked mostly tonight about how to live as a child of God. How are we to respond to the problems in life? Well, I tell you what. Whatever your situation is, if you're not in Christ, I guarantee you, you do not have what you need to get you through the problem. You need Christ. You need the Lord. You need to be a Christian, and you need to be faithful to Him. You need to be faithful to the Lord. That's what you need to do. Tonight, we're going to sing the song, All to Jesus I Surrender. Are you willing to do that? Are you willing to surrender to the Lord? If you've never been baptized into Christ for remission of your sins, why not tonight? Do so as together we stand and sing the song to select if you're encouraged.